She received 8 Hugos, 6 Nebulas. These are all awards for science fiction. In 2003, she became only the second woman honored as a Grand Master of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. The U.S. Library of Congress named her a living legend in 2000 and in 2014. She won the National Book Foundation Medal for Distinguished Contributions to American Letters. So though I don't think it meant that much to her, if she needed to be validated, she's been validated. We want to be validated too. And the way that you can help us to do that is to make a contribution. And though we are certainly encouraging those who love Ursula to make the donation for her books, we want you to know that, you know, we welcome support in any kind, in any format, in any amount. For $5 a month, to a one-time fee of $60, you can get a tote bag or a beanie that has the cutest little Kabu logo on it. For $6.25 a month, you can get a very chic black t-shirt with red lettering that says KBOO, KBOO Radio, and that would be a one-time fee of $75. For $25 a month, you can get a KBOO hoodie, and that would be a $300 donation. But you know something? You figure out what works for you. Whatever works for you works for us. But again, we enjoy bringing this information to you. We are your review source. If you don't have time to review books, we do that for you. We certainly hope that all of you will support authors who come to town. But if you can't do it, or if you're not sure you want to, you can listen to the programs in our block, and you are going to meet these authors and decide if you want to see them in person, if you want to get all of their books, go to the library and get them all, or if you're the kind of person who has to have your own, buy them all. But we are doing the screening for you, and we are bringing your attention to people that you might not know. One of the people that we love is Denorja Price. She is local. Many folks here know Denorja. She's a great sci-fi writer, and we've introduced her on our show. So again, KBOO is your portal to culture in and around this area, and we invite you to support yourself by supporting us by dialing 877-500-5266 or going to kboo.fm/give and signing on online. All right, we're going to get back to more culture, and we're going to talk about another book on Between the Covers. This is the title is Home Remedies, and there will be an interview with this author. So let's see, Emma, anything else you want to say at this point?
No. Call 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Patricia. Thank you, Emma. We will check back in with you in a few minutes. For now, I got to tell you about a couple things happening in and around your community, and I got some help with that, and then we will get in right into a conversation with, I hope I'm saying this correctly, Swan Juliana Wong. That's coming up right after this.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue, open daily from breakfast to late lunch. Daily Cafe serves new American breakfast and lunch, along with wine spirits. Lunch was provided by Thai Pod, located at 2015 Northeast Broadway Street. Serving a full Thai cuisine menu, Thai Pod is open for lunch and dinner. Dinner was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 710 North Killingsworth Street. Open from 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. or later every day. More information at atlaspizzapdx.com. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
The dulcet tones of Mike Fotopoulos, interim membership coordinator and helper outer to this season's, this fall membership drive. And now, as promised, more talking about books.
Good morning and welcome to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is Swan Juliana Wong. Wong earned a BA in creative writing from the University of Southern California and an MFA in fiction from Columbia University, and was a Wallace Stegner Fellow at Stanford University. She's also studied Chinese literature at Peking University in Beijing, worked as a translator for the Chicago Tribune and the New Yorker, taught English, produced commercials, and directed a documentary for Discovery Channel Asia. She's received fellowships from Yaddo, the McDowell Colony, and the Breadloaf Writers Conference, among others. Her work has appeared in The Atlantic, Plowshares, Narrative, Gulf Coast, and elsewhere, as well as garnering a Pushcart Prize and being anthologized in Best American Non-Required Reading. Wong currently serves as the fiction editor at Fence and teaches creative writing and Asian American literature at UCLA. Xuan Juliana Wong is here today to talk about her debut collection of stories published by Hogarth called Home Remedies, named one of the most anticipated books of 2019 by many and one of the best books of the season by Elle, Publishers Weekly, The Daily Beast, and New York Observer. The New York Times says of Home Remedies, "In these tough, luminous stories about destiny, frailty, belonging, and heartbreak, every good thing comes at a price. Each character gets something he or she wants, but only by sacrificing something he or she needs." Vice says, "Wong places herself in the school of writing clearly about weird things. Her stories have the immediate oxygen burst of Amy Bender, the just strange logics of Deborah Eisenberg, and the intense alien curiosity of Mary Gateskill. Her fiction is chameleon quick and only casually surreal, just enough to stay true to the weirdness of living." Finally, Nylon Magazine adds, "Filled with characters who mirror the chaos and anxiety, exhilaration and despair, desire and fear of the world around them, Home Remedies offers searing portraits of millennial Chinese immigrants. Wong's shimmering words offer proof that even the most mundane of these lives have the potential to become something extraordinary, a great explosive talent." Welcome to Between the Covers, Xuan Juliana Wong.
Thank you, David. I'm so happy to be here.
So I want to start with the project as a whole of Home Remedies, because you've spoken about the collection, the 12 stories broken into three sections, as sort of mapping the 10 years of your life, your 20s. And I would love to have you orient the listeners to how you envision Home Remedies intersecting with you and your experience.
So I began writing the first stories in my early 20s. And that was when I've wanted to know what made a family, how families come apart, and what I wanted from my family. And also just, I think that was just something I was obsessed with. So I wrote stories about that. And then in my, you know, mid-20s, I was in love and was disappointed and had lots of you know, interesting escapades, and I wrote love stories. And I think by my early 30s, I was more, I had bigger questions about life, and I was trying to answer, or at least attempt to answer those.
So family, section one, love, section mm-hmm. two, and time and space, section three.
Yes.
Become, in a sort of a way, the trajectory of you.
Yeah.
Even though none of the stories are autobiographical.
True.
Yeah. That's interesting. The stories of Home Remedies are centered around both Chinese and Chinese-American protagonists, and they're often intergenerational. Yet it feels to me like the collection is doing something different, that it's sort of operating on different terms that make it new and fresh than perhaps the most familiar tropes we might expect from literature of immigration mm-hmm. to America, in America. And because it feels so surprising and unpredictable in the sense that as I'm reading these stories, I don't know where they're going, which feels like one of their great strengths. I don't feel like the familiarity that I might expect. It made me suspect that maybe you were aware of certain overused narratives mm-hmm. Or stereotypical stories, that maybe you were pushing against something mm-hmm. Or avoiding something altogether mm-hmm. in immigrant literature, mm-hmm. in English. And so I wanted to know if that was true, and if that was true, what maybe you could characterize what those things you were either trying to avoid or mm-hmm. to trouble.
Interesting. I feel like maybe especially since I've started teaching Asian American literature recently, so I've had to read a lot more contemporary Asian American literature, and I do feel that something is changing. Something is just the stories that people are telling, the characters that are coming up. I haven't read these before. They're not the stories I read when I was young. Certainly, I think I just feel like I had a very weird life. And I never saw that in writing. I never read a story about it, and I never saw it, you know, in a movie. And I didn't purposely write against that trope, but I just was just trying to be truthful about the stories I wanted to tell.
Is there a trope or tropes that you could articulate that right. are unsatisfying to you as a reader, but that maybe you see have seen too commonly mm-hmm. before this generation of writers?
I feel like I'm not concerned with making my parents understand me. You know, I'm not concerned with like defining who I am against who they want me to be. Mm-hmm. That's just not my story. So I'm not going to tell that story.
Well, you've said that the book, you consider the book after Yi-Eun Lee and after Ha Jin mm-hmm. with regards to capturing an unrepresented contemporary moment. Mm-hmm. Could you unpack that a little for us? Like why these two writers
right.
That you're working under in a sense right. or extending from your experience of these writers?
Well, Ha Jin is really interesting to me because he basically he went to school in the same university as my parents in the same town, Harbin, where they lived before they immigrated to the States a little bit before me. And when I first read Waiting, I felt like I was communicating with some part of my parents or something. Mm-hmm. I had a different channel into them. And in a sense, he's always stayed kind of my parents to me because they're the same age and they were yeah. over the same place, you know. And I think Yi-Eun Lee is an ongoing conversation I've been having. I really admire her work, and I feel like it's changing and becoming really different and really... this is like an intellectual conversation about literature I was never able to have in my life with any person that I grew up with, all my family. And I think I was able to have that by reading her all these years. Mm. But I do feel so completely different. And I don't know where it is that like that separates us. But I know that the way that we see the world and the way that we're processing is completely different. And I admire her, but I also really don't think we're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a moment to tell you how you can get a copy of Xuan Juliana Wong's Home Remedies, and how in doing so, you can also become a member or renew your membership to KBOO. This is your opportunity to show that you value the long-form, in-depth conversations we have with writers on Between the Covers. And at the same time, to show that you value, in general, non-corporate social justice programming on your radio dial.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO, and it's our fall membership drive. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman from Black Book Talk, here with...
Patricia Welch, librarian emeritus, also with Black Book Talk.
And this morning, we are asking you to call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give and give generously. One of the big reasons to give generously is that you keep shows like Between the Covers on air. I am so thankful to even be listening to the show. I am being introduced to a new author, and I live to read a new author's work. So I can't wait to go out and get this book and read the 12 stories that Juan Juliana Wang is introducing us to this morning.
That's what I was thinking. It's just so exciting to be introduced to any new work of literature. And, you know, within the first few minutes, you realize you're either going to connect or not. But I'm hoping that the excitement that I'm feeling in learning about this new author, new to me author, and this new work is what people feel when they listen to our show and we introduce them to a whole host of African-American authors that I'm sure many people aren't aware of. We get to know them. We know people call us and say, we have a new author, you want him on your show? And we say, yeah, and we're learning. But that's all a part of the KBOO experience, that you turn KBOO on because you want to learn more about or be introduced to something, someone's, some line of thought that you didn't have before. See, folks, again, this is live radio. Somebody's phone is ringing in the background, and somebody turned that phone off. We are mentioning no names. Could be me, could not. But anyway, we don't want to hear our personal phones ring. We want to hear the KBOO phones ring. So again, this number is 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm. And also, I think it was mentioned that you can also go, did you say there's a Facebook page that people can go to?
Hi, it's Sonia the Engineer again. I made a little post on my Facebook saying, asking everyone I know to help pitch in to support KBOO. I just put the hashtag support KBOO, and I just included that link there, kboo.fm/giv, and Facebook very helpfully included that as a link, and folks can just click right on through. So that's something you can do to help spread the word after you've made your contribution. And I'm also inviting everyone, Patricia, you mentioned earlier that what a huge annual boost it would be if everybody who gives monthly increased their monthly contribution by exactly $1.
Absolutely.
And I'm calling on everybody who already gives exactly $10 a month to do a Tufnell and go to 11.
Yes. Commit.
Yes. And again, that's if just the $10 a month people became $11 a month people, that would be $10,272 for KBOO to spend on replacing and repairing aging equipment, making sure we can pay the staff a livable wage so that they can afford to do the work that needs to be done for which we have to pay people, and to really do what everything that costs money to in bringing you the very best in community run, community funded, right? Electronic media. And with that, I'm sorry, I have to cut all of us off and go back to the program. We're going back to a little more of what we're asking you to support. So why don't you do it right now at 877-500-5266. Thank you, Patricia. Thank you, Emma. And we will be checking back in with you shortly.
Well, one of the most generative and compelling aspects of home remedies for me is the specific moment in time that you are sort of dilating.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get tensions and disconnects between generations,
mm-hmm.
Which is something that you often expect in immigrant literature. Both within China, we get these tensions. Within America, we get these tensions, and between generations in China and America. But because you chose a period in China's recent history where it experienced both an unbelievable amount of growth and an unbelievable amount of wealth generation,
mm-hmm.
the distance between one generation and the next, and the difference between the experience of one generation to the next is extraordinarily immense in perhaps an unparalleled fashion.
Right.
And I wanted you to maybe talk a little bit about that metamorphosis,
mm-hmm.
that many of these stories are capturing.
Right.
And the distance that's creating between just one generation to the next because of the rapidness of the change.
Right. When I came to the States, I was 7, and my mom had been here for 2 years. And I think when I left China, it was still very much like, I remember there was no more television after 10 p.m. Like, the television was over,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then I got to the States, and then we went to Disneyland immediately. Like,
yeah.
I just felt like this kind of change was it, you know, if you talk about the uncanny or surreal, like that was surreal. And I feel like there's something about not growing up with your parents at a really young age and not being able to see them, which is also, I mean, it's immigration, right? That happens to people. So I was separated from my mom for 2 years. And I feel like it gave me, like, crystallized my memory. I just remember things. And I feel like I remember the way I felt all the time. And, you know, being sensitive and going through all this change, it made me really focus on that, you know. And I think for my, what it gave me is, I think going through these changes and living through, you know, as you said, like such, like such hills and valleys of experience and wealth. And I think it gave me two problems early on. I think I had a really early existential crisis, and then I felt like this, I felt paralyzed by empathy for everybody.
And what was the existential crisis?
I remember, I think I was at Disneyland or something. We were obsessed with going to Disneyland. My mom actually always says that's the reason we moved to the States, because she went and she was like, I need to bring her here because this is, you know, it's
that's
wild
amazing.
And so nice, you know? So I remember, yeah, like we were at Disneyland and I thought like if all of this is for nothing, like if we're all going to die anyway, why live? And I had this mad panic. And I felt like because what I experienced in life already before that was just so, it was just, there was a lot of difficult, like a lot of trauma and a lot of, it was a lot of fun and also really warm, but just a lot of aching feelings and people that you don't want to leave behind and all this stuff. And I came here and then it's just supposed to be, I'm just supposed to be happy because I'm in this happy place. And I felt like I had a question, like, why, what is life for?
Yeah,
that was my first problem.
Well, I mean, you're describing the sort of uncanny and surreal juxtaposition of the Beijing of TV going off at 10 p.m. and then coming to the United States and Disneyland. But there's also what you're capturing is the metamorphosis of Beijing itself.
Right.
So when you go back in your 20s,
yes,
it's not that Beijing.
No.
I was there 20 years ago in Beijing, and I did not recognize anything that you wrote about in Beijing now. And it sounds like that's similar to when you were seven and when you were in your 20s.
Right.
So I was curious about it. So I went to online to China Daily, and they had this, I'm just going to quote a paragraph that I think captures this really well. Imagine a group of people with more members than the whole population of the United States, a group that does not have to worry about loans or mortgages as their parents take care of all of that. A group that has only seen prosperity, and a group that is determined to have the best the world can offer. Meet Chinese millennials, a group that will not only reshape China, but also the world. Chinese millennials, those born between 1981 and 1996, number more than 350 million, or over 25% of China's population. They're the main drivers of the country's surge in consumption, with spending by those under the age of 35 accounting for 65% of total consumption growth. Two-thirds of all Chinese passport holders are millennials. Over 90% of them have a smartphone, and more than half of all luxury goods purchased by the Chinese are bought by millennials. They are transforming every sector of the economy, from travel to education. When I read that, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, but it's also something you're capturing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said at the beginning, I don't want to write about how my parents feel about my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get that sense when I read that description of China. I mean, you're not a Chinese millennial in Beijing, but there's also this sense of like the future is now, which I would also describe as one of the feelings of reading Home Remedies. Mm-hmm. The future is now.
I feel like, you know, after we immigrated to the States, I went back to China every year. I don't think I ever missed like a single year. So I would always go back and stay with grandparents or something and, you know, had my parents around. But in my 20s, I was my own person. And that's when I met friends. And that's when I kind of came into who I was and experienced life, you know, as an adult person in China.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like when I hear that, it sounds like there's more nuances to that, I believe.
I just randomly picked that.
Yes, but I think there's a lot of truth to it also. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I liked the way you've described your experience living in China as in your 20s, because it feels like it's also an inversion of a stereotype. Mm-hmm. You said you felt more free to be whoever you wanted to be while mm-hmm. living in China, much more so than living in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And in that light, you also said that in LA, it didn't feel like anything extraordinary would happen to you, but that in Beijing, it gave you permission to be any kind of person you wanted to be and to live an interesting life. I wanted to hear more about that experience mm-hmm. of being in Beijing and
mm-hmm.
and the way you just I love the way you describe that experience mm-hmm. because that's the way most like that's like the American mythology, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're using to describe China right. against the American experience, mm-hmm. whereas most Americans would pride themselves in that being the experience mm-hmm. of being in the United States.
Right. I mean, growing up in the States, I grew up in the suburb in LA County. The school was majority, it was like half Asian, half Hispanic. We knew where everybody was from, whose parents were from what. You know, it was very, and I was very aware that I didn't know anything. You know, I'm actually not from, I feel like most writers, contemporary writers working right now, their parents immigrated to the States to attend college. So here, so that gives them a kind of status into the society. I feel like for the people that arrived like I did in the early 90s, a lot of us, like my parents, they never got to go to school here. Mm-hmm. They didn't know anything. I didn't know anything. And it was I felt like very terrified my entire life, you know, just trying to do the right thing and trying to mm-hmm. Not embarrass myself or help them not embarrass themselves. And I felt that made me feel like I was just going to keep living this life and eventually be an accountant or something. And then when I went back to Beijing, I felt this freedom. I felt like no one expected me to do anything. And maybe it was also because I've never felt special at all in the States. I was like just mm-hmm. another immigrant daughter just trying to get good grades so I can go to college. And then when I went to China, I feel like it gave me this, and I didn't deserve it, but because I spoke English, I could teach English, I could translate, because I just naturally translated my whole life from English to Chinese and back from my parents. So, and that allowed me to see lots of things. And then I felt like I could walk into any building and not be afraid that people I wouldn't belong there. I could just ask. And I feel like only that has to do with finally being in a place where everybody looked like you. And also what you just said, like this place had changed. This mm-hmm. place was full of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a moment to tell you how you can get a copy of Xuan Juliana Wang's Home Remedies, and how in doing so, you can also become a member or renew your membership to KBOO. This is your opportunity to show that you value the long-form, in-depth conversations we have with writers on Between the Covers, and at the same time to show that you value in general non-corporate social justice programming on your radio dial.
Hi. This is Patricia Welch of Black Book Talk, and I'm here with Emma Jackson Ford, also of Black Book Talk. And we're here to show our support for KBOO's cultural programming. I am fascinated by this book. I the whole issue of immigrants and the immigrant experience is so much in the news now. But this is a perspective that I have never heard before. I think... I remember hearing something like, you know, once every decade or something, there is a spotlighted book by someone from the Asian community. So, and I think even longer gaps between anything in cinema. I think that's why Crazy Rich Asians, while just one an enjoyable film, was also such a revelation for people, because it was an image of Asians that you hadn't seen. But this woman is bringing us a millennial experience, and also the idea that a person who is quote unquote fortunate enough to come to this country could actually go back to China and have an experience that is happier. That's the kind of unique experience that KBOO offers you. We hope that you're enjoying this, and if you want to read this book as much as I do, we want you to know that for a $60 donation or $5 per month, that you too can enjoy this experience. All you have to do is call in to us at 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give. And we have all these wonderful people from the community who are just sitting here. They're just waiting for you. Don't make them feel lonely. Pick up your phone. Get on your computer. Walk in the door. But come on down and let us know that you are loving what we're doing as much as we are. And now we want to get back to our interview with Xuan Juliana Wong's book, Home Remedies.
We are back with Xuan Juliana Wong talking about her debut collection of short stories, Home Remedies.
Is it really true that you ended up in China partially because Amy Bender refused to write you a recommendation for MFA program until you had done more living?
Yes. She said 2 years.
2 years of doing something else, yes, other than going from your BFA to your MFA.
Yes. I cried. I was very upset.
Yeah.
And
how she, bold of her, though.
And she says she doesn't remember this, which is really, yeah.
Yeah. Do you look back and feel grateful for it?
I feel like I owe those. I owe everything to that decision. Hmm. I would be a completely different person if I hadn't.
If you'd gone straight into an MFA.
If I'd gone straight into an MFA.
Huh. In case you just tuned in, we're talking today to Xuan Juliana Wong about her debut collection of stories, Home Remedies. Well, let's talk about some of the stories that engage with this generation of Chinese millennials. So tell us a little bit about Days of Being Mild, mm-hmm, how that came to be and what it's about.
I wrote Days of Being Mild, I think, in one sitting. I wrote it, I had moved back from Beijing to go to MFA, and I wrote it during the first week of class.
Wow.
It just came out of me. And I think I wanted to write this feeling before I forgot it. This feeling of being young and stupid.
Hmm. And it's being young and stupid, I guess, or drifting, yeah, but also affluent,
mm-hmm,
too.
Right. I feel like, to me, it didn't seem like affluence was the part that made them feel good. I think it was the freedom. No one was watching. No one is making you do anything.
Yeah.
And I think I was actually really thinking about like Ryan McGinley's photographs. I saw the kids are all right, like on the internet, I think, in Beijing. And I went to so many photo shows. Like, I really like contemporary photography. And I think I just looked at people's faces, and I'm kind of shy, so I usually don't look at people's faces. So I felt like all these photographs and like giving me ideas of different scenes and different situations. And I compiled these kind of sketches together. Mm. But I felt like the feeling of why would you want to leave this place? Because the big question of my parents' generation and their enduring question of their life is, how do I leave China and how do I stay in the States? And I think in this time, the question is it still worth it to leave? Should I leave?
Right. And the main character's hiding that he's going to eventually potentially go,
yeah,
and follow the expectations of his family to Louisiana and work the
right.
oil fields, yeah, that his that is family yeah. owned.
And yeah. even, you know, even like as a reader, I feel like, or as like somebody who knows what, who's driven through Louisiana, I'm like, that's not better than your life.
No, than his making his yeah. music videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Alexander Cheap, he picked and presented this story mm-hmm. as part of Electric Literature's recommended reading series. And he said this, "I remember when I read an earlier draft of Days of Being Mild back when I was on the faculty at Wong's MFA program at Columbia. Finally, I remember thinking, the Chinese wealth youthquake that became the subject of so many trend stories seemed always to talk over the lives of the people described instead of letting them speak. But here was a story from inside that moment." And most poignantly, Chi poses the question, what is it like to enact a life as an artist according to Western standards and become illegible to yourself and your peers, much less your family, and yet still love it? Lastly, he points out something that I love and I think is true about the collection at large. He says, Wong brings her failed filmmaker and his self-consciously posed circle to vivid life in dagger-cut prose, allowing their contradictions and self-destructive impulses to flower in front of us, and their catastrophes become the real art performances they are capable of. So I know that was a long thing that I just read, but this idea that the character could be becoming not only illegible to his family, but to himself, and yet love it, mm-hmm. it feels like a thread that runs through this book mm-hmm. for me. Because there's a line in Days of Being Mild that goes, we've read Kerouac in translation, we are marginally employed and falling behind on our filial piety payments, but we are cool. Who is going to tell us otherwise? And similarly, this echoes in other stories. There's an exclamatory line in the story Future Cat, which follows a second-generation Chinese-American who's not interested in revisiting her parents' sacrifices, and it's just... She just wants to live! Exclamation point. And it feels like the collection is sort of insisting upon the present moment or the singularity of it, even though that present moment has what's going on between generations and between situations. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's the immediacy of it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if that rang true to you, and if you could talk mm-hmm. about maybe ways in which, if it does, the ways in which rendering that mm-hmm. as a writer.
I do think it's impossible to escape your past and where you come from. And it's impossible for a group, you know, the Chinese millennial generation, maybe those of us that were born before 1987, everybody remembers what it's like to be a little bit poor. There is some memory. And then to not worry about it again is mind-blowing. And I feel that when I try to write about the present moment, I want the present moment to be real because I feel like my experience of life is that way, right? Yeah. I'm propelled forward and I find everything really interesting, and I want to be able to say something that hasn't been said before in a fresh way, but also I can't pretend like I'm not attached to this history or this family or these circumstances that have made me who I am. And I think that's true for every one of my characters. So I put them there, and then I want them to, I don't know, behave, like interact with each other and like throw things off course. And then I want to try to figure out why.
We're going to invite some KBOO volunteers into the studio to talk about how you can get your own copy of Xuan Juliana Wong's Home Remedies, and also either become a member for the first time, renew a membership, or reestablish a membership with KBOO Community Radio. So this is your opportunity to show that you support literary in-depth programming on the radio dial, as well as supporting non-commercial, volunteer-powered, and listener-sponsored radio.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO, and it's our fall membership drive time. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman from Black Book Talk, and I'm volunteering here this morning to ask you to go to your phone and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member if you aren't already a member. If you are a member, please give, call. Any amount is acceptable, but if you want to give $200 or $250, we'd love to have that also. Please show your support.
You know, I am enjoying this interview so much. I am just so touched by this book. There's a line where she says, apparently, the character is illegible to his family and himself, and yet he loves who he's being. And then she says, you know, it's impossible to escape your past. It's impossible to escape the family that's made you who you are. But her characters very much want the present to be real. They don't want to live their parents' life. And I'm thinking, this is very specific to these characters, and yet these are universal themes. But I want to see how these themes are resolved in the book that she's written, Home Remedies, by Xuan Juliana Wang. I don't think I'm going to be the only person who feels this. And again, if you would like to have your own personal copy of the book, please become a one-time $60 or $5 per month pledge person. You can be new pledge, you can renew, you can increase. We will certainly take more, but we only have 3 copies of this book. So we invite you to dial in 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give. Also, when you call in, please tell us why you're calling in, what it is that makes you a KBOO member.
Or you could give $120, which would only be $10 a month. If you, like me, love to read, I know you're enjoying this show a lot. So show your support by dialing 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give.
And did you mention?
We are back with Xuan Juliana Wang talking about her debut collection of short stories, Home Remedies.
Well, thinking about legibility and illegibility, I wanted to talk a little bit about language before we talk about more stories. Because when you moved to the States at 7, you've said that you didn't know how to say any words in English, even when you knew what they meant.
Mm-hmm.
And this made you very aware of language. And you eventually forgot Chinese and then relearned it in your early 20s, working as a translator in Beijing as a result. And you said that having 2 languages is one of the greatest gifts a writer can have. For example, that there are already a lot of stories innate in how one language says something versus another language. And I was hoping maybe you could talk more about that.
Oh.
The advantages of second languageness and the stories embedded in the differences between the 2 languages that you speak.
I was telling somebody about this earlier. I think my understanding of people and situations, so much of it has to do with, I think I most, like my biggest, my first move in the writing a description is I translate it into Chinese and translate it back into English, because it's always like it's something else, you know? It's like another way to get to the same idea. I feel like I love to read badly translated Chinese books. Like I could read in Chinese, but it's slow. So a bad translation is it keeps kind of the idiosyncrasies of the Chinese, but just into English. And I love that. I feel like it's poetry, like on accident all the time.
Yeah.
And I could hear the Chinese echoing into it. I find that, like, I write that into my stories as well. Like, characters ruminate on that. And I think living in between, I feel like I can just easily switch back and forth between these 2 languages. And it gives me, it gives me more like sometimes an interesting turn of phrase. But I think it also, because I don't exist in one language alone, I feel like I can, disappear and reappear, or like be a spy. I feel like I'm always like eavesdropping on conversations, or people are always asking me for help because I think I have the look of understanding, and I don't know how other people can. I wish everybody had it. I feel like you'll fall in love deeper, you'll sleep better, everything, your life is better.
Well, you just said that you will take English and translate it into Chinese and then back into English.
Yeah.
And you've said before that you like to translate boring phrases in English into Chinese and then back again into English. So is that an actual revision process for you to elevate language in English, or to defamiliarize or make interesting language in English that feels like it's too flat?
I don't think it's a conscious move on my part, but I find myself doing it all the time. Mm. Or like I'll just be walking around and be like, oh, hug, and I break it down into Chinese and I'm like, huh, you know, like, and I just think like, oh, that's two movements, you know. Or like I'd like to think about the characters, you know, and like just like what big pictorially they mean, and like why two components mean this word. And then if I write those two components out in English, does the same idea come to the reader? Usually it does. Or idioms, or just, you know, the kind of the really bad poetry that, you know, my family will say like for laughs, I'd like to translate it back. And it's like always, I know, it's always makes this language richer. And I think also it's really interesting because I'm just a little bit bad at grammar. I'm just forever. I feel like it's never going to get better. I think I come to English from this language and I bring some kind of baggage, and I'm never going to like gallop as fast as the next person. Yeah. It's a different way. And I think maybe because I'm aware that I will never be able to write that kind of perfect, crisp, you know, I don't know, cerebral prose that I really admire, I'm writing something else. And I think the what that is this in between two language consciousness.
Well, I picked out a little section that I think is probably one of the ones you're referring to, and you say that your characters ruminate on language also. So if you don't mind reading a little excerpt, it's on page 32.
More than anyone, Sarah is the woman who helped us all get over our shyness with and general distrust of white people. With Sarah, we learned many of her American customs, like hugging, and that took months of practice. Arms out, touch face, squeeze. We learned that Americans are able to take certain things for granted, such as the world appreciating their individuality, that they were raised believing they were special, loved, and that their parents wanted them to follow their dreams and be happy. It was endlessly amazing. We also learned English. Realized how different it was to speak Chinese. We didn't used to have to say what we meant, because our old language allows for a certain amount of wiggle room. In Chinese, we can ask, what's it like? Because it can refer to anything going on, anything on your mind. The answer could be as simple as a one-syllable men, which means you're feeling stifled but lonely. The character drawn out is a heart trapped within a doorway. Fear is literally the feeling of whiteness. The word marriage is the character of a woman and the character of fainting. How is English, that clumsy barking, ever going to compare?
We've been listening to Xuan Juliana Wang read from Home Remedies.
We're going to invite some KBOO volunteers into the studio to talk about how you can get your own copy of Xuan Juliana Wang's Home Remedies, and also either become a member for the first time, renew a membership, or reestablish a membership with KBOO Community Radio. So this is your opportunity to show that you support literary in-depth programming on the radio dial, as well as supporting non-commercial, volunteer-powered, and listener-sponsored radio.
Hi, we're back here in KBOO Studios, and hope you have enjoyed listening to this Between the Covers interview. David Naiman once again doing a great interview, this time with author Xuan
Juliana Wong, discussing her book, Home Remedies. Again, it's wonderful to hear about a book from the author in their own words. And if you enjoy it, and especially if you enjoy this book and would like your own copy, you can do so by either becoming a new KBOO member or renewing your membership at the rate of $5 per month or just a one-time donation of $60. And for that, we will certainly give you a copy, send you, you can pick it up, of Home Remedies. There are only 3 copies of this book, so please call in soon because we want you to get yours. But more importantly, we want you to show support, one, for this kind of programming, which is unique to KBOO. There's no place else in this area where you're going to hear author interviews, learn about new books, get reviews on a regular basis. This block from 11 to 12 between the covers is filled with you're going to hear 3 different kinds of programming. Certainly, you hear David Naiman and his co-host on Between the Covers once a month. On the first Thursday of the month, it's Black Book Talk. On the second Thursday, it's Words and Pictures. So there are a variety of kinds of programming, but it's all about books. And if you believe in this and you want to support this, which in effect is supporting yourself, we ask you to dial in at 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give and be an online donor. And you can come in. Whatever works for you works for us. And please don't be intimidated by thinking that you have to make huge donations. $5 a month works for us. That is $60 a year. And then for $5 a month, you can get a KBOO tote bag. You can get a beanie. If you want to do $25 a month, a little higher end, there are KBOO hoodies, 2-sided hoodies. And actually, we have lots of other kinds of gifts and premiums, tickets to shows. I don't have it in front of me, but, you know, we reward you in many ways for supporting us. Emma, anything you want to add?
Just to say that when you support KBOO, you're handing over the microphone to the real people who live in Portland. You are giving the mic to the local reporter who's covering the issues that affect you. You are giving the mic to the local activists working to make our communities better. Or you're giving the mic to the local musician who's singing songs that were written here and sung by someone who lives here. Please give generously. 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give.
We are back with Xuan Juliana Wong talking about her debut collection of short stories, Home Remedies.
You've also said that you want to write stories that you could describe to your dad,
mm-hmm.
Who doesn't read English,
mm-hmm.
and for him to be able to enjoy the stories that you're describing. And I guess I wanted to hear more about how you see your dad as an audience of sorts,
mm-hmm.
how that might change or inform the way you tell stories.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my dad is somebody who is not very patient, and he appreciates a good story though. I think this is maybe relatable for a lot of people my age, like you run out of things to ask you to talk to with your parents. And I want them to feel like I want to talk to them. I just have nothing really new to report and mm-hmm. neither do they. So I used to summarize stories that I've read, you know, from grad school on. I would just, I would just summarize like a Maggie Shipstead, like her story that I just read in a magazine. And then I would feel his reaction. And because I'm verbally telling these stories, I know how important it is to grab an audience and to keep them interested. And I feel like in my storytelling, I always hope that there's an interesting person going through something interesting, and it's kind of funny and a little bit sad, and in the end something happens. And I just wish, I feel like if I can get that, then my dad would listen to the story.
Yeah.
He wouldn't, you know, start cooking or something.
Yeah, I really love that. Well, I wanted to ask you about your name and the origin of your name, Juliana. We talked a little bit about this before, just since we're talking about languages and 2 languages. Juliana isn't the name you were born with, which would be Wong Xuan.
Mm-hmm.
tell us how Juliana became your name and why for you.
My Chinese name had a really nice story that I was told in my life, that my mom visited the Forbidden City when she was pregnant with me, and she saw like a pavilion, and it was snowing. She felt really good when she saw this pavilion. It was really beautiful. And then she the pavilion was something xuexuan, so like it had that word in it. He was like, oh, that's such a nice word, like I feel at this moment I'm gonna name my daughter this word. Right? And you know, the word also has its own meanings. So I was given this story growing up and I felt pretty good about my name. And then I came to the States and I went to second grade and no one could pronounce this name. Like everybody was you know, and then from the person that worked in the library to my teacher and everybody around me. So she recommended to my mom that I get a new name. And we didn't know any names. So my mom went to the back of the Chinese English dictionary and read all the names out loud. And there weren't that many. I think there were only like 20 to 50. I don't remember. It didn't take long.
Yeah.
And she read it twice. And I picked Juliana because it was the longest.
Huh. Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah.
Well, before we leave the question of words and what they represent, one interview asked you an interesting question. They asked you what words you despise that have been used to describe your writing. And you answered, I don't despise this word at all, but Chinese feels like the most used description in reviews of my books. Yes, the characters are Chinese, but I don't believe their race or nationality is the most important or interesting quality about them. And in my mind, I link this to something you said in a podcast, but I don't know if I rightfully connect these two things. But you said, I used to say my writing wasn't political, but now I think that writing about Chinese people as people without making any radical statements about a culture at large is itself political. So I was hoping maybe you could talk about either or both of these sentiments.
I feel very strongly about that. I think maybe because I've always felt like writing was mine, because it was the one thing that because my parents can't read it. I mean, my mom can, but I made her promise not to. It's just something that it's what I'm expressing, something real about the world as I see it and the things that I believe in. And I think that because I'm from China and because that these characters are often Chinese, I don't feel like I have any responsibility really to be being a political, like a outspoken, you know, political figure or like a intellectual on China, US relations. And I think because I do think that it is on purpose that I do this, that I don't feel like I need to make that statement.
So I was going to ask you if your next book would be a collection structured around the decade of being in your 30s, but I read that you are contractually obligated for your next book to be a novel. Is that true?
It's true.
Yeah. Can you talk about your novel project?
I have been thinking about my novel a lot. I've been really afraid of it. I've said many times before, like, I think I never expected to have to really publish a short story collection, and I was so happy that it happened, that before I turned it in, I really tried to put everything in it. I felt like if this is the last thing that they're ever going to publish that I know how to write, then I want it to have all of the elements that I love about short stories, and I want to show, like, you know, all the different ways that these stories can be told, and I wanted them to be really different from each other. And then after I did that, I feel like I sat with that for about a year, and then I'm like, oh, I feel like settled enough to write a novel. I've had a lot of failed novel attempts in the past. Maybe part of me thinks a novel should be like a very detailed scroll watercolor painting, you know, the kind that used to hang in like off, like in like important places growing up. And I remember every time I saw those paintings with the perspectives, and I would think every day I can come to this painting and find something else I like about it. I would notice that there's a little like fish jumping out like near that like rock. And, you know, I would notice that these two people are sharing a secret, and there's all those details would be real at all. Like it would be super flat and the perspective would be 100. And I think I was trying to write novels that way. I thought I had to paint everything. It had to be like Anna Karenina or nothing, you know? That's what novels were.
All right.
And now I think it's good to just, for me, it's going to be good enough just to deliver this truthful feeling.
Well, I really look forward to it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Thanks for being on the show today, Juliana.
Thank you so much. This is an incredible experience.
Talking today to Xuan Juliana Wong about her debut collection of stories, Home Remedies. You've been listening to Between the Covers. I'm David Damon, your host.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Apollo 50, on a mission since 1969. On Saturday, September 21st, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Theory at OMSI in Portland. Animal Aid of Portland is a no-kill rescue that enhances the welfare of companion animals through care and commitment, rescue and adoption, resources and education, and community partnerships. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary with the Apollo 50 Party. The event features drinks and hors d'oeuvres, interstellar activities, and stories from across time and space. Again, that's Apollo 50, on a mission since 1969, on Saturday, September 21st, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Theory at OMSI, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grundle's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, soup, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Grundle's Coffee House is open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grundle's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue. Open daily from breakfast to late lunch. Daily Cafe serves new